Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome into this week's edition of Bullring Breakdown. This is the driver interview part of the week. I do want to mention that all driver interviews are brought to you by D&L Disposal. They should be your first call for your waste management needs. They offer a regular residential garbage route in Jasper, Troopsburg, Woodhall, Addison, and the surrounding areas. Aside from that, they also offer dump trailer service rentals for your bigger needs. They'll drop it off at your location. All you have to do is load it up and they'll take it away. Give them a call at 607-382-7600 09 to get started with D&L Disposal, the premier residential waste management service in the Woodhull area. And this week I have the privilege to introduce that I am joined by well, race car driver, IMCA promoter. I think there's pretty much not a hat he doesn't wear. So Jake Maynard, how are we doing today?
Oh, we're doing pretty good. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. So I guess I just want to start with your racing career first before we hop into all the IMCA stuff. How'd you get started in this, I guess this hobby that we all that takes over all of our lives?
Well, I've been around it for years. My dad started running dirt in 1988, and when I was born in 96, it was asphalt, so. Most of my life I spent at a racetrack at Tioga or Chemung. And then when he retired, he got me started in go-karts. And from there I went to Slingshot, ran a few years in Slingshot, and then ended up in an IMCA modified in 2012, and I've never looked into a different division.
Right. So what kind of drew you in towards the IMCAs? Because I think probably in 2012 there wasn't I can't imagine there is a whole lot going on in 2012 for the IMCAs.
In 2012, there actually was a lot of tracks.
Okay.
You had Dunhill 2, which is now the Hill Speedway, Five Mile Point, Afton, Brewerton, Fulton would have us
Okay.
occasionally. Black Rock or Outlaw had us at that point. There's about five or six, seven different racetracks that would have us in the area. And I do remember tour races having upwards of 34 to 35 cars at the point.
Okay, so would it have been kind of after that where they kind of went away?
Right around the time Ed Billings stepped down, I think he stepped down due to health issues and just he did it for 16 years. And then we went through a spurt of a new race or Eastern Region director. And then we went through having no Eastern Region director. And that's kind of where the demise went down. And they really class started to die out because of that and the lack of tracks up in the north kind of just dropped the class also.
Right. So I've talked to a few IMCA guys, and one thing that I think that they all kind of have in common is the challenge that they get out of the enjoyment of driving them. Can you just kind of the best you can just kind of explain just the different challenges that come up for an IMCA? Just the because it seems like they're hard to drive.
After so many years, to me they are so hard to drive. One night you could be hooked up fast, the next week you're can't get out of your own way. The technology these days changes almost every month. Something new's coming out, or somebody's trying this, somebody's trying that, and you're trying to just stick with what you got going. But everybody's getting faster at the same time, so it's. That's the challenges of it. That's why I like the IMCA, is it's always a challenge every week. You're always learning every year. And in retrospect, I mean, it helps you to help other people out in other classes, giving them the ideas of what you've tried with your car. I know there's guys in street stocks that have asked IMCA guys, well, what are you doing here to keep it pinned down here? And we just tell them and they go out and they get a little bit faster.
Right. The one thing that I did want to touch on is the tire. So I guess well, I guess I'm not very knowledgeable when it comes to I'll say 95% of race car parts. Obviously, I could tell you what the tire is, but what about because I hear a lot of complaints from about how hard the tire is. Could you just kind of touch on that about what the difference is kind of there between the IMCA tire and I guess the regular tire on, well, not regular, but the tire that most of the other classes use?
The IMCA tire is a G60-15 spec IMCA stamped tire. It is harder. I will admit that. That's what the great equalizer is to the class. Back when I started, it was all open motors. There was not a crate motor involved, a spec engine involved. It was whoever had the biggest motor can hook it up and go on every night. That's what we had. Over the years, it's evolved to now who's got a crate engine and an open engine. And I think around here is 85% of crates now, which helps hook the harder tire up. Really, the only, I mean, some of our guys do complain about the tire being harder,
It's
but
not
they
you
all,
guys. Mm-hmm.
yeah. Our classes do because they think it makes the track glaze over a little bit. I don't know if that's true. I haven't noticed a difference between when we start racing to the time that the feature's over with. But the difference pretty much is the durometer numbers. Ours durometer cold around 56, 58, which is really hard. And they're like your street stocks, they're probably like the low 50s to I would say mid 40s or maybe a little bit softer.
Okay. Yeah, and I know the modifieds are what, 48 usually. Is that
Yeah.
pretty? Yeah, so that's I guess what do you what kind of made you decide to start this whole deal with did you start the NY Penn series, or is that something that you kind of took over? I guess how did you get started with the whole promoting deal? I guess is when did you put that hat on?
Well, technically, I promoted a few races beforehand. Back in 2016, Rolling Wheels was kind of looking for some different classes to come in and for their so-called race fan fest. So I got a hold of the track and he said, "Yeah, we'll do it." And he asked me what kind of purse to put together. And I told him, "Well, if we can try to get this thing sanctioned, let's do 1,000 win, 100 start." And he goes, "Okay." Well, it never ended up being sanctioned because he didn't want to go that far. He didn't want to go that route. We ended up with 16 cars at Rolling Wheels, which was pretty good because I did all the legwork, really. He just put up the money and gave us the track. And then 2020, about, yeah, early 2020 there when the COVID hit, when nobody was really racing. Got a hold of Gary Falk Jr. out at Penn Can back when his dad and mom were running the track. And he was helping me, and he goes, "Let me get back to you around August time, see where things land. Maybe we'll put you on the schedule for King of the Can." About August, it was about the end of August. I only had about 3 weeks to put this race together. He says, "If you can promise me 15 cars, we'll pay $1,000 to win, 100 to start." So, okay. I can promise you 15 cars with that kind of payout. 2 weeks goes by and I'm doing lap sponsorship. I'm doing hard charger award, hard furthest haul award. I think all the awards were like $250. Well, then I sold each lap twice, so two drivers each lap took home lap money. We ended up 24 cars that night. And if I knew how easy it was to get things sanctioned then, that race would have been sanctioned. Would have been nice. But about a week went by, and then I got an email from IMCA, my personal email from Jim Stannard, the vice president, saying, "Hey, give me a call." And I'm like, "Oh no, I'm in trouble here." Because we didn't go IMCA type modified. We went IMCA modified, which there's a trademark issue there. So if you're an unsanctioned track and you're using IMCA modified, it's trademark. But if you use IMCA type modified, no, there's no legal issue. So that's where I thought this was coming from. And one night after work, I just called and he goes, "We caught wind of your race at Penn Can and we were very impressed with the car count." And one thing led to another. And if I remember correctly, the way the conversation started off was, "Would you be interested in doing an Eastern Region director for us?" And it took me a little while to think about it. And I told him I wanted to do a possible tour. And late 2020 is where we resurrected or I should say, we created the New York Penn IMCA Modified Series. And I took over the job of Eastern Region Director also.
So what does that entail, the director part of it?
I pretty much take care of any big issues between Michigan and Florida. I think Alabama has one track, and I think they are part of the Eastern Region, and pretty much Pennsylvania and New York. But most of the guys in Michigan and Florida, they just call IMCA if they have an issue, I guess. But I
Right.
haven't gotten a phone call yet.
Maybe they don't have any issues.
And maybe, we have some issues around here sometimes, but I mean, they're so minuscule, it's just you don't even worry about it.
Right. So what
Sometimes
kind
it
of
just blows over itself.
right. What kind of issues can you disclose that, or is that private?
He just, oh, he hit me kind of thing. It's
Oh.
just one of those nails, and then you just sit him down and we just hash it out, really, I guess.
Yeah, race car drama.
Yeah, we all have those.
Right, yeah, right. So what, I guess, when you started the series, were you confident that you could kind of get the car count? I know that you said that race at Penn Can, but were you confident that you could, like, I guess, keep the car count that way?
I had my doubts, as every new promoter does. But first, we went back to Penn Can for the first race, June 1st of 2021. We had 23 cars. Three of them were from Michigan that night. So I felt pretty confident after that night, even though it was a very rough night for 37 laps at Penn Can. But we won't. That's too much of a story, really. But I was, I'm, in my opinion, I'm still digging myself out of that hole. But then you ask the drivers and you ask fans, and, oh man, you brought the class back. I'm like, I know I brought it back, but it's not where I want to see it yet. I
Right.
want to be able to say at every tour race, we're having consistent numbers of 20 plus. And now we're floating around there. I think this year we're averaging 19 cars per race, which is the best we've started off the season with.
And you guys run, so when you guys do a lot of Friday and then Saturday. Like this weekend you were at Outlaw on Friday and then Woodhull on Saturday. You guys do a lot of that, right?
Yeah, I mainly try to keep the tour races on nights we would normally race.
Right.
I wouldn't mind a midweek show. We have done midweek shows in the past, and we still had good car counts. It's just hard because most of us are budget racers. We
Sure.
work 9 to 5 or long, hard jobs where it's hard to get off kind of thing. We all have families, so I try to keep that to a minimum. Every year, I wouldn't mind just one. I think we'd be all right if we had just one midweek show kind of thing.
Right. Now the other thing that I wanted to touch on too is I guess as a racer, I know I kind of take your promoter hat where I'm gonna hop all over.
Yeah, that's fine.
But as a racer, I know Thunder Mountain picked you up this year and I think you guys are doing every other week. Now I don't know if you race there. I know you pretty much race at the Hill, right? And do you enjoy the travel aspect of it? Or are you just kind of as a driver?
As a driver, I love going to different tracks as a driver. You learn different things to do with the car. Again, it goes back to how hard these things are to drive. Your car can work good at the Hill Speedway, but you go up to Thunder Mountain where it's more hammered down and a bigger track, you're gonna find things that don't work. And fine examples, Keith Lanfear this year goes to Woodhull and he was pretty dominant so far this year.
Yeah,
He
Jacob
chose the
Bingham might have
barrel.
something to say about that, but yeah.
Yeah, he does. Keith Lanfear, fast at Woodhull, fast at Thunder Mountain, goes to the hill, and there's nights he gets out shaking his head, wondering what else can I do to this car and make it fast here. But anywhere else I can go is just I struggle. Or I'm faster anywhere else, I struggle here. But yeah, we run the hill weekly at fr on Friday nights.
Okay.
Thunder Mountain is bi-weekly this year. And then we're up there with you guys monthly. Pretty much the monthly deal. And here comes the promoter's hat. We're trying to expand IMCA again and bring in old tracks and new faces. There has been some guys in the street stock class and other classes express that they would get an IMCA to run Woodhull, but they have some stipulations on how to get it and why they would get it. So it's just you gotta work slowly and take baby steps in a way.
Right. I've heard from a lot of drivers that, if Woodhull did next year go every other weekend, they'd think about going to IMCA. And so I've heard that too. So that's got to make you pretty happy.
Yeah, it does. And you look at our car counts we've had with you guys up there this year. I think the worst you guys had is 16. And the best you guys have had is 18. So we're there. And I think Nikki and Terry are happy with it also.
Well, I don't know how you couldn't be. You guys come and you bring cars. I mean, at the end of the day, I think at the end of the day, as a racetrack owner, you got to look at it like a business. And if you guys are bringing cars every week, then what more do you want? That would be my philosophy anyway.
Oh, I look at it as a business for everything. I watched my dad promote a go-kart track when I was young, so I kind of got an idea how to go about things. So I look at it as a business decision. Is this going to benefit the track as much as it's going to benefit our class? And I try to work with the tracks to help get more cars to the track. This year, car counts are up everywhere this year. The Hills worst, I think they've had is 14 this year, 14 or 13 this year. Thunder Mountain, the worst they had was 12 or 14, and it rained that night all the way to 7 o'clock, and 9 o'clock we raced. And they've had really good car counts there, and you guys have had good car counts also.
Absolutely. So how does that make you feel as the guy who I've heard from a couple different drivers that if it wasn't for you, they wouldn't be here. So how's that feel for you to have good car counts just about everywhere?
Makes my head bigger than it actually is. No, I shouldn't say that, but it makes me feel good that my hard work is going noticed. I do work very hard, take time from my family to do all this stuff, and also race at the same time. With the busy weekend we had, I haven't seen my two kids in more than 10 hours probably this week already, and I've been home since Sunday morning.
So how do you, I guess do you I guess as a promoter, do you just kind of go to not the tour series, but for what you kind of did with us and you tried to get tracks to do it weekly, when you go in there, do you just kind of go in there with specific tracks that you're looking for, or are you just kind of floating the idea out to everybody and hoping that people hop on board?
Well, when I guess at the beginning of this winter, I think Nikki and I talked about it briefly last year about trying bi-weekly this year. And as time went on, I thought about maybe we just try monthly and see how it goes from there. Then we'll make a decision from here on out. And like my, Vice President over at IMCA, Jim Sander, he goes, "You don't want to overwater the crop. Let it sprout itself, let it work its way out." I think we're teetering back and forth between being able to add another bi-weekly track on Saturdays if guys in the what your guys' area show commitment and actually do go get cars. I think we can do the bi-weekly next year for sure, because I know a few guys, I think we can do it and add more to it, because then we could work with Thunder Mountain, and on off weeks for them will be your guys' weeks of racing. So there's racing every Saturday night.
Right. Have you ever thought about kind of putting together a I don't know, just kind of something that you could because I well, I guess what I know you got that big race coming up at Thunder at the end of the year. Did you kind of think of maybe just, maybe try to do something for Woodhull to kind of help that out and, vice versa. Just try to do something a little creative, I guess, is what I'm asking.
Oh, my mind's always going in wonders of how to be creative. And I thought about trying to figure out how to create more cars to come to Woodhull for that big race. I guess we could have made this past weekend winner as the guaranteed starter for the big race at Thunder Mountain. But Again, here we are thinking about it and talking about it.
Sure.
I didn't think about it beforehand.
Well, you got a lot on your plate too, like you said. You're trying to run, well, I guess you're trying to run all the IMCAs in the Northeast, and then you're trying to run a series, and then you're trying to work on a race car, and you got kids. So,
Yep.
you got your hands full. So I don't think anybody can really take away for, or really blame you for, forgetting about some things. And I'll say it too. Just the amount of money that you can raise is almost unbelievable. I think for every almost I well for the w race at Woodhull, I was kind of shocked that every dash spot got paid. I was looking at that and I said, you know what? These guys ran four laps and not all of them got paid. You can't beat that.
Yeah, in most of our dashes, it's usually winner take all.
Okay.
And the other night, Fred Mann got a hold of me a few weeks ago about being the sponsor for it. And he asked if we could put his sister's pizza shop as the sponsor. So he paid for it and put her pizza shop, Murphy's Pizza, on there. And he goes, "I want to pay top two." I said, "That's fine." Well, then Saturday morning, Drake Stone, crew member of Jacob McConnell, got a hold of me and says, "I want to donate $100 total. I want to do 50 towards the winner, and can you figure out 50 for somewhere else?" And I said, "Sure." And I thought, sat there thinking about it, like, why don't we just pay the top four in the dash? And if we have two heats, then everybody's going to get paid at that point. Because with three heats at that point, you got to do top two, you have six cars.
Oh, okay. Is that how you guys do it then?
Pretty much three heats, we'll do that. But if we have four heats, then we'll just do the winners of each heat and go vice versa.
Okay.
So it was nice to see some of them, everybody walked away with something. And I mean, yeah, $25 for third and fourth is $25. But
Well.
when you look at it, the guys that got. The guy that won, he won a heat race, and the guy that got fourth, which was Rodney Morgan, or he got third, got $25. But he got $25 for winning the heat, so he got his pit pass back.
Right.
Second place got their pit pass back also, so
Right.
it's not a bad deal.
No. So how do you go about doing that kind of stuff? Do you just go ask businesses straight up? Say, hey, this is what I want to do and this is what I'm thinking. Do you guys want to be a part of it?
I do have a sponsorship proposal put together, and I go to people I'm close with first just to help them out, get some business probably drummed up and advertisement, tax write-off for them. And if they can't do it, then I start branching out to different local businesses in the area. I try to work with local businesses to the track, so it helps them be in front of the hometown crowd and be like, "Oh yeah, I forgot about them," or something like that.
Sure. Yeah.
And it helps in the long run.
Right, yeah, 'cause I could see where like you wouldn't want to be down in, well, I don't know. I guess all the tracks are pretty close. Well, you wouldn't really want to go to Thunder Mountain and be advertising a pizza shop in Dundee.
Okay.
I could see where that wouldn't really be the most beneficial for your sponsors.
Yeah, like Friday night, Brandon Smith of Beers Tree Service, he sponsored Outlaw Race along with a local company down here, Just Kingsley. He's from Columbia Crossroads. The other night we had Rich Howard of Chasing Dreams, and I think, yeah, Jonathan Lubbock of Lubbock Sales and Marketing. They're right there close to you. They're in Addison, so
Yeah,
that helped.
did you know that he's my announcer partner?
Yeah. Funny story is, I texted him Sunday morning thanking him for doing the sponsorship. And I told him, I said something to him, and he goes, "Yeah, I'm the friend that used to help Richard out when he ran for your dad," because Rich Howard used to drive our team car when I was younger.
Really?
And it's just a small world. I'm like, he does look familiar, but I can't put a finger on how I know him. And it just rang a bell when he said that.
Yeah, I was happy to see that he hopped on board. I told him that I needed sponsorship for Demolition Derby, and he just goes, my checkbook's in the truck.
Actually, after talking a little bit on Sunday morning, I did mention we have another race coming up in September, so he sounded interested. Maybe we could bring him back as a sponsor for that race too.
Yeah, he's a good guy, and the The other thing too is he doesn't have to work for you guys, you know, because I think we've well, he's called the one, no, the two races at Woodhull that aren't sanctioned by the tour. So he got to sponsor the race, and then he didn't have to announce it because more you guys got Morgan. So you know, I'm sure he likes calling the action, but you know, if you're sponsoring a race, sometimes it's fun to just watch.
Yeah, and I was very appreciative of having him and Richard come together and do what they did. And you never know what September's going to bring because Morgan can't make that race. So maybe I could test out the vocal cords.
Hey, I'd be happy to fill in. I'm starting to learn all the guys.
If you want to, we can do that.
I was gonna tell Morgan, I forgot, because last year I worked at Outlaw on Fridays, and he you know, he threw it out there to me before about getting in touch with you, and I did mean to tell you guys that if you guys ever did need a fill-in on a Friday night to let me know and I could see what I could do. But you know, obviously Saturdays I'm committed, but you know, I couldn't do the every weekend deal anymore. So, but you know, every once in a while, I wouldn't mind filling in if you ever have the opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, I think the 27th you can do that if you want.
Sure, I'd love to.
You're hired.
Well, that wasn't hard. I didn't even have to send a resume.
Your pay is a cheeseburger.
That's fine. You know, I probably shouldn't. A little bit of technical difficulties there, so we're just gonna. I'm gonna try to remember where we are, but if I repeat myself, I'm sorry. But I was saying how I love doing the job and I love talking to the drivers, and I never really pictured this as something that I do for money, and now I get to do it for money. So I think this job is awesome.
I can see where it would be fun. I don't really get paid much. I mean, I get paid to promote the races. It's a little bit, but it's pocket cash for me.
Right. Well, it's all about the. I mean, obviously, for what you do, you have to love it. You know, you have to love the class. You have to love the sport. And I think everybody can tell that you have, because I talked to a few IMCA drivers before I started this, and they all said that you were going to be humble and grateful, but you're the man that saved the class around here.
I try to be humble about it. I mean, there's things that pop up and people that kind of say things that it does get under my skin and does make you think twice about what you're doing. But in the end of the day, I love what I'm doing and love the challenge of finding tracks and sponsors to help out with everything.
Right. So you touched on a little bit of Woodhull. How do you think that's going? Have you talked to some of the drivers? Do they kind of like this once a month deal? Do they like the track? You know, I know it's kind of tricky sometimes. So, what are you hearing on that part of it?
A lot of the guys, they seem pretty happy when they come to Woodhull. The one thing that I've noticed a few people say is the surface is tricky. That's the tricky part about it. Like you guys touched on your guys' show the other night. Like Terry said, you guys give us the benefit of the doubt. We go from track here to track to there. And the notebook at Woodhull is very thin compared to the hill and Thunder Mountain.
Right.
So it's hard for us to actually read what your guys' surface is doing. One night we could be up there and it'd be tons of bite. And the next week we'll be there and it's dusty in the heats. And we're like, what are we going to try now? And that's where, I mean, we've been there since 2023. 7 times, maybe, on top of the other night. So, I mean, we're building that notebook, but we're not fully where we need to be to know what to do to when the track turns.
Right. Now, is there like anything that you can talk get from other classes, or is the IMCA kind of all on its own based on, you know, just kind of setup wise and everything?
Oh. I mean, we can talk to guys like the street stocks or modified guys and ask them, well, what's the track doing for you guys? And if modified guys say it's slick for them, it's definitely going to be slick for us. I will not be bashful. The first two races this year for IMCAs didn't go as I hoped and as planned, especially the second night up there. I mean, we struggled to get laps in. And that was the night that a lot of the modified guys even told me that we were out there spinning, we were trying to get a hold of the track, we couldn't figure it out either. So I felt maybe the track was slick enough that we were having that kind of an issue to get the bite we needed and keep the car straight and going. But when we clicked laps off that night, I felt that things went smoother as everybody figured out this track is not what it was like last time.
Does that make it a little bit more difficult when you're coming in once a month, you know, 'cause just so much can change in a month, you know, at the beginning. So what was it? You guys came in May, and I think that was the only week that it didn't rain. And so, you know, you're getting so much rain, and then you guys come back this past weekend and it's been pretty dry, you know, just through the month of July. So does that kind of make it a little trickier just with those conditions too?
Oh, it definitely does make it tricky. The last few years, when we've come in, it's rained all the way up until Friday, and it's just like at the beginning of this year. That's how it was. It rained Friday, and then Saturday, hey, we're able to go race, and we're going to go race at Woodhall. So yeah, it does make it really difficult to try to judge what the track's going to do. Early in the running order, we've been early in running order pretty much every time up there this past week, and I thought the track held together pretty good this week,
Yeah, I
vice
was.
with all the issues you guys
I was worried.
faced.
I was the heats were it was starting to look a little rough for the heats, but it stayed together just long enough to put some water down on it. So, you know.
Honestly, I thought the heats were pretty good. I know the IMCA's put on a good show for the heats and the dash. The feature, we started a little bit rocky the first two or three laps, but then we really clicked off some laps there.
Right. Well, that's got to be good to see. And two Woodhull's, and I think Terry's mentioned this a lot, you know, Woodhull's always been tricky for anybody. So when you guys are coming in there with a car that really nobody's driven on it much at all, like you said, you got no notebook, and then, you know, it's tough, and the guys don't have the experience, you know. I mean,
I know from my previous talks, a lot of the guys that used to run IMCAs at Woodhall, even back in the day, they said this class struggled with bite and just how slick it would get. So, in a way, I think technology has come a long ways that has helped give us some bite into a track like Woodhall. But I so far have liked watching the racing at Woodhall that we've been producing.
Definitely. Now do you I don't know if you can answer this being a promoter and all, but do you think that the racetrack might owe Earl Zimmer a win?
Oh, it definitely does. It definitely does.
I felt so bad for him because I thought for sure this weekend he was gonna do it again, do it too. But you know that Rodney Moore, I mean, that's just a dream weekend, I guess, for him.
Earl definitely—he's never stepped foot into an IMCA until back in May at the Hill the first week. And that was just a hey, I got an extra car from Gary Lanphier, and can you want to jump in and try it out? He jumped in and tried it out, and I think he started like 10th or something, finished 4th at the Hill, and that's a tough track to get an IMCA round also, tight little bull ring, and he impressed a lot of people that night. I mean, the guy's 48 years old and he's a rookie again. And then the next night was at Woodhall, and if it wasn't for the drive shaft, he would have won because he had a straightaway lead on everybody.
Yeah, he I yeah, he was giving it about or he was putting it to him.
And he broke and he was hitting the steering wheel and punching it. And I'm like, this guy's fire is lit. And I talked to him that week and he goes, this is a whole new challenge to me. And I just started having fun again in racing, doing it. So yeah, I was a little mad over that whole scenario.
Oh, I'm sure that, you know, just it's gotta be frustrating, you know, for anything, you know, you're out front, you're out front by a good bit, you know. The only thing that could really save the other people is a prayer from God, and then the drive shaft lets go, and that's, you know. So have you ever been in that situation as a driver?
I have led the race, but I've never let anything like that
No.
stop me from winning the race.
Okay.
Late caution restarts kind of thing. They have gotten me where cars stumbled or something stupid, car bushes. But it's part of racing, really.
Right. So you said car pushing, and that kind of brings me to something I want to touch on.
Oh.
I kind of want to just kind of go through your head as to what happened this Saturday. I think you made the right call with everything that happened. I think you guys made the right call. But just for some people that might not agree, kind of just, what kind of went through your head and what, I guess just what you were thinking on the infield.
Well, this is actually since Saturday night at 10:30 when it happened. It's weighed on my mind of if it was the right call or the wrong call. You ask some people, they say it was the right call, a fair call. And some guys, they don't feel that way.
I know, I'm sure they don't.
Leading up to it, we were clicking off the laps, and I thought we were going to go green the rest of the way, and the rain was not going to become a factor. And then I think we had a debris caution. It's something, it was a quick caution. I do remember that. And just as we were cleaning up the mess, I felt sprinkles. I looked at Todd Burgess. I looked at Terry Pierce. And they both looked at me and says, "It's starting to rain." And it wasn't a hard rain, but we went to the radar and looked at the radar, Terry and I did, and we were right in the middle of the blob of rain. And we're like, "If it's only sprinkling, what do you want to do?" I said, "Well, you know, you're." I looked at Terry and I did say, "You know the surface better than I do." And we all looked at the track in the corners where it would be the slickest possible. We didn't see any like glisten, like the track was like overly wet. So I made the call and I said, "Well," both Terry and I both agreed that if we kept the cars on the track with what kind of rain shower we're having right now, it'll keep the track ran in. And we'll be able to finish this race. So we made the call to go back to green, which now looking back at it, we should have never done that.
Sure.
But it's heat of the moment. You got cars on the track, you got people in the stands, and you're halfway through the race. You don't want to call a race due to rain halfway through it, but it's happened. So we made the call, and when they went back to green is when it really started raining. It went from a light sprinkle to a light rain, and it made turn one pretty slick. That's when I looked at Terry and I said, "Hey, this call caution." So he came over, said, "Jake can't, is calling the caution, throw the caution out." And I think by the time he realized somebody tried keying up over top of him, I believe, because when we came out of turn three, he finally got a hold of over his radio. We just couldn't get it out in time. I thought their caution came out immediately when he said it. But going back and looking at the video after Saturday night, caution never flew until we got to turn one and half the field went across the line. So there were some people saying we completed a lap, which is correct. We did complete the lap, but I thought, and so did Brock, he thought he had it out in time, but looking at the video, we were both wrong. So I do see everybody's frustration. We had a guy go from fourth to first, and we had a guy go from fifth to second, and those were the two ones that got mad at me. If you ask Todd, I'm a very hard on myself kind of person. I overthink a lot of my decisions. And sitting there after the races the other night, I was wondering if we made the right call and if it was the correct call. And it's too late now to go back and fix it. So we made the call to revert back to the lap 13 restart because we couldn't really get a definite answer of who was in what position also with the scores. So I don't know if something happened with the scoring loop also at the same time. But we had to revert back to lap 13.
And you do you stand behind that today, or are you still kind of flip-flopping?
I'm flip-flopping because as a racer, I could see where it's unfair that I just went from fifth to second. I just worked to get up to here by that one lap. And you made us go racing in the rain, but at the same time, where we were standing, it wasn't raining that hard
Right.
until we went green.
And I was watching the race out of the booth, because I don't know, Morgan will probably tell you too, that booth was hot on Saturday night. So I you guys came up, I said, well, Morgan's calling this, I'm gonna go watch it from out in the grandstands. And I can agree with you, it was a light sprinkle, and then all of a sudden it started to rain pretty good, and that's when the green flag dropped. And of course that's when it came,
It came from turn one and worked its way over, and turn three, I looked over in the lights and I didn't see it raining that hard. But when we got to turn one, it was coming down hard in the lights. So I look back, in a way, I wish we just kept the cars under caution and seen what it did first. But
Sure.
we hurried it up because we didn't want to drag out the show any longer, and it was looking to be a early night for everybody.
Right. Well, I'll say too, and I think I mentioned this on Saturday. I guess it's the main thing is nobody wadded up a car. You
That's
know,
another thing that goes through my mind.
you were able to avoid that. Like you said, I think the way the rain came, if it would have stayed like it was originally, I think you guys would have been fine. I think it just came at the absolute most unfortunate moment that it possibly could have. And I think I talked to Morgan Colgrove, and he goes, yeah, when Rodney Morgan went into turn one and he just pushed like a dump truck, I knew something happened, because Rodney's not going to do that. But
Rodney pulled over, and him and I talked about it. He goes, "I wish down the backstretch, I just pulled into the infield and made it look like something broke, so we didn't have to go back green." And in that moment, we would have realized, "Oh, maybe we should get him off the track." But like you said, nobody wadded a car up, which I'm highly thankful for, because I wouldn't be able to be happy about what happened the other night. Because there's a lot of money on the track, if you think about it.
Absolutely. Well, I'll say the losing a spot or two, I think you'll still sleep at night, but if somebody went home with a bent up race car, that might, that's when you're gonna stay awake.
Oh yeah, and I'll put it on myself. I think that I made the mistake saying yes, let's go racing real quick, instead of just waiting it out and seeing what came from that little rainstorm that went across the track. But as a promoter, you got to make mistakes to learn from things.
Well, there's nobody out there that's perfect. You can see that on Facebook every week.
Yeah, nobody's perfect.
I don't know if there's a track, a series, any that hasn't taken their lumps. So, and you know what? Yours wasn't all over Facebook, so at least that's something.
Which shocked me. I honestly definitely thought Sunday morning I'd wake up and see a lot of things about don't know why we were racing in the rain and stuff like that, but the few people that did complain, one was the seven star, but I think he was happier finishing third than wadding a car up, like we said. And the other one was, I think, on top of everything that happened to him the other night, Keith Lamphere.
Sure.
He had a good run going. Something happened in turn one, got a right front flat. He came out half a track behind the pack, and he just couldn't make up any more ground. So a frustrating night led by the rain delay kind of thing. I understand his frustrations, and he and I talked about it on Sunday morning. I took went up to the shop and we talked a little bit. So
Did he tell you that he lost the point lead now?
I don't think we were really worried about that at that point, but I did hear that.
Yeah. So, what do you think of that? You said that the car count's been great at Woodhull. Do you keep an eye on the points there, or are you just worried more about your own series there?
I always keep track of points. I like to see where the hot points battles are. And what's unique about the IMCA points, it's 1 point per position. So it's 40 points for a win, and then you just subtract 1 point all the way down. And I think if you get to 24 cars, if you start 26 cars from 24th on back, it's 17 points. So that's a lot of points if you think about it.
Absolutely, and I don't think there's anybody probably as happy as Jacob Ingham.
It for this is his second year in IMCA, full year I should say. He's dabbled a little bit here and there. Last year he was a rookie. This year is the second year. He's put an impressive drive on this year. for a brand new car, and for a Kay Dillard car, that's not really, they're more of the UMP, USRA kind of car. He's come a long way with that car, and he's got it coming on in the late run of the season.
Yeah, and Andy suffered from the announcer's curse too. Cuz he was leading that he was leading a race, and I messaged you and I said, "Hey, has Jacob Ingham ever won a race?" You know, just cuz I don't know nothing about the guy. I'm trying to make my rounds and talk to a few of the IMCA guys. I talked to the Hungsingers this week, and you know, I'm just trying to meet these guys, but it's tough. And so I messaged you, and then sure enough, as a little while later, here comes Keith Lamphere, gets by him.
I don't remember what happened that night, but I think he just lost all forward drive, and because the car went backwards pretty quick after he got passed. So, yeah, he was fast at Thunder Mountain, and I think it was the following week we were at Thunder Mountain after that race, and he was fast there. He won the Dash for Cash, led the first few laps, and I think he went backwards, but he's got a win coming. He's for sure has a win coming. Just he's got to get his aces in a row and line them all up.
I think you're right about that. He did pick up a win, what, at the Hill, you said? Was that? But that wasn't IMCA sanctioned.
It was Penn Can last
And
year.
can. Okay.
He was going out there to test something. He tried something new on the car, and he went out there and waxed him. I think it was a half a track win.
Boy, that's got to make you feel good.
Yeah, it made him feel good. He had confidence booster going back to Penn Can a few weeks later for a tour race, and track totally changed, and it didn't work.
Right. I've always said I'm, or I said, were you there? So the third race of, well, or would it have been the second? The second race. So not this one, but the one before it, the Keith one. I said it's a good thing that that Jacob and Keith are pretty good friends, because if not, I think Keith might have been shown a big white door.
They'll run each other hard, and that's
Well,
one
they
thing
were. I think he did just about everything but spin them out.
that, they work out of the same garage, so they're not team cars, but they work out of the same garage. They're good friends. That's one thing about Keith Jack. I can run hard with him. Anybody can run hard with Keith, and we could be like a millimeter apart and get out and be happy about it. So, and Jacob's another guy that you can run hard with. You guys bump, he's not going to be mad over unless it was deliberate. So we got a good bunch of guys in this class, actually.
Right, I was going to say, I don't know if I've ever really seen anybody from the IMCAs get too upset. I guess you guys have all ran. I'm guessing there's probably are things behind the scenes that I don't see, but you know, nobody's ever drove over the front end of somebody under caution or anything like that, you know. Just
I've seen it, but
stuff
that's
like,
years
well,
ago.
this year at Woodhull, I mean, you know, stuff that you see at, you know, other classes sometimes do, and you know, I haven't seen that from the IMCA, so. You know, that's good.
It's been a pretty clean and green kind of season for people wanting to feud. There has been a few things that has popped up, but a lot of it's just water under a bridge at the end of the week.
Right. So, how do you handle that point? Do you just kind of sit them down and talk to them and say, "Hey, we're trying to have fun here. Figure it out."
If I feel it's going to get any worse than it actually has gotten, I'll try to moderate it, and kind of hash it out and say, "Hey, let's get this over with. Let's go back to having fun." There's been two instances this year that have been at the Hill, minor issues, and I said, "Look, we just gotta man up and talk it out." They talked it out, and everything's been good since.
Do you have the ability to levy like a suspension?
If it's a tour race, yes. Anything with a track, I pretty much allow the track to handle it first thing. If it is too big of a severe issue that I need to get involved, then I can, yes.
Yeah, I just didn't know if maybe that fell under the director role if you know, if I don't even want to speculate what somebody, you know what I mean, where somebody would use their car as a weapon under caution, just, you know, something that could happen to where they would get suspended. I didn't know if that came from you or if that was just from the track, I guess.
I have had to suspend one person so far my promoting career, and I didn't want to, but after talking with IMCA, we just agreed that it was time for him to sit out for a week.
So when something like that happens, do you call well, who that you said Stannards is,
Yep.
do you just get on the phone with him and you guys say, hey, this is what happened, what do you guys think, and just kind of talk
Yeah.
it over?
Yeah, we just talked it over. So I don't want to go too far
Sure.
into being too harsh on the guy right off
Right.
the bat. But if IMCA feels there's a need for a fine or a suspension, then we will take care of it that way. But I try to be a very lenient kind of guy and just let things, I wouldn't say slide, but I let things
Work themselves
get
out.
worked out pretty much.
Yeah, well, the one thing that I've noticed too is a lot of the times, kind of time heals all wounds, you know. You're not, you
Yeah.
know, I know that sometimes things kind of go on for weeks at a time, but for the most part, I'd say that most of the time it, you know, once something happens, most of the time people kind of get over it pretty quick, you know. At the end of the day, it's all supposed to be for fun. You know, we all go to the track and we're supposed to have fun. You know, it's supposed to be released from your day to day. So,
I call it my therapy session.
right. Well, that I think that's the idea behind it, you know, but sometimes people get a little too upset, but I don't know. Maybe if I had a car, I don't know if I'd feel any differently, you know. It's easy for me to say that from the announcer's tower.
There's been a lot of things that I like about racing. Mainly the just climbing in the car and everything just gets forgotten. You don't worry about the bills. You don't worry about how the kids are doing at their daycare, at school. You don't care what's going on at work at that point. You're worried about yourself and what's between you and the next 20 laps.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't, yeah, I, 'cause, I guess my derbies are the same way, you know. You could go into it, you could have the worst week of all time, but then as soon as you put the helmet on, you're kind of in the zone, and it really is funny. If you haven't never done it, it's kind of amazing just what you forget.
There's times that I don't agree. A race can go green checkered, and I don't remember what happened through it, but I remember seeing the green and the checkers.
Right. I remember one time we were sitting there and we're watching the video, because if people record it, I'll watch it the next day. And me and my dad, I go, I don't even remember that happening.
I do
It's
that all
just,
the time, watching other people's video. Man, I don't remember that.
yeah. Or I didn't think that that was that hard, or something, you know. I didn't think I hit him that hard, or you know, something like that happens, you know. But yeah, I don't know.
That's the one thing I've noticed that's changed in our racing in this area. I remember every racetrack almost every week had videos. And with the streaming coming along, I can understand and see where that came. It has kind of gone away. But I remember Woodhall a few years ago had somebody come in and do videos weekly.
Right. This is what I always say to people, that and I don't know about Woodhall specifically or any, it takes a good group of people to be able to put that on. You know, you need people, 'cause I don't know, to be honest with you, it took me and Keith Brewer, and if anybody knows Keith, you'll believe this story. It took us an entire practice session to hook up the speakers, because I came into this, and somebody asked me if I wanted to try it, and I'm kind of learning as I go. So a lot of that stuff I don't know, and it takes a dedicated person to be there every weekend to film it, and then you got to have the ability to know what technology to use and what. To get the audio there, and I, you know, it's hard. I don't, I'd imagine if you asked Paul Cole about like Canandaigua, he'd say he's got a great group of guys behind him. You
Oh, he definitely does.
know, and I'd
I
say that a
mean,
lot of racetracks don't have the benefit to get some people like that. And you know what? Maybe that says a lot about him, you know, about the kind of guy he is. But I just, you know, it's hard to get employees to show up every week and do a good job.
oh yeah, I remember when I was growing up, before I started my IMCA career, running go-kart Saturday or Sunday kind of helped with this. My Uncle John, D&J Photos, my Aunt Dawn, they used to do videos down at Dunhill too. Well, I was the guy behind the camera, so I kind of I like seeing people record things and go live on Facebook because it does help you go back and revert to things. But I miss seeing somebody actually being able to go out and sell DVDs or something like that, but DVDs are now to the wayside.
Yeah, right. When's the last time you bought a DVD?
Yeah, good question.
You know, I that's you know, I but you know what? I think there would be a market for that. I really do. I think if a couple weeks ago, Aiden Grover, he picked up his first ever modified win. You know, I think if that's something that he could sit down and play, 20 years from now, where
It's moments like that, picking up your first win ever or first win in this class, and it was an exciting race. It's those kind of moments that going and buy like a thumb drive, somebody put the whole week's video on or the DVD, it would be nice. I got tons of racing videos. There's dates I can look at and I can tell you exactly what happened on that date. Why? Because I bought it for that reason.
Right. Yeah, that would be a neat thing to bring back. I don't really know if I ever really see that coming back. I kind of wonder if you could ever sell enough to kind of keep everybody paid, you know?
That's a tough part. I remember DVDs used to be $10 a week, and then they went up to $20 because of how much work went into it, and you got to pay your employees to do it. So, I guess recording it and then somehow putting it onto a thumb drive at the end of the week, it might work out for you in a way, possibly. Or you just put it onto a website and somebody goes on and subscribes and buys it that way.
Right. What do you think about Facebook? Do you think it helps or hurts motorsports?
That's a very good question. I can see the helpful side of it all is promoting live videos where people can that say you got a family member that's sick at home, can't get to the racetrack because I don't know, say they broke their leg. Well, hey, we could watch it on Facebook and put it on the TV now, so they watch it and cheer you on that way. The negativity part of it is everybody's got a keyboard and two thumbs
In an opinion.
and doesn't like to police themselves, and they're not afraid to go on there and bash. I have learned in my last 5 years of being a promoter, you just let things go, you read it and you remember it and go on with your day.
Right, that's what I always said too, is I know sometimes it's hard to kind of look at things and go, well, who are they? But most of the time, the complaint's not that big of a complaint.
Yeah.
And the person that's making it, I mean, is that really the best thing that you have to complain about? At the end of the day, it's supposed to be fun, so let's not bury ourselves and not make it fun.
That's one thing I can say as a promoter. I've only had probably one thread on Facebook take on a bunch of comments and a lot of negativity comments. And that's really it.
How'd you handle it? Did you just let it go, or did you have a conversation, or?
I let it go until it got to the point where I'm like, I don't need our sponsors being drug into this or seen or people. It got to the point where it was starting to get to the point of where you just had to delete the comments and turn the commenting section off because
Oh,
it
I've been
wasn't
there.
very professional on a lot of part.
Right. Yeah, I've been there. That's tough because sometimes I want to get on my personal account and rip somebody a new one, but I don't. I don't
Yeah,
sometimes.
it's hard, but I mean, I've seen it on your guys' posts sometimes that something happened and somebody just gets on there and starts bashing, and then it just becomes a chain effect, and then you got to stop it somewhere, somehow.
Well, even just the silly things you probably saw it, but I put up a post about Billy Van Pelt. We had pictures of him from the Hall of Fame. We all went up there, and we put a post out about it. And then you got, oh, yep, the only place he could win. It's like, why do you gotta, even if you think that, why do you gotta be the one to put it on there? Why do you gotta be an asshole just to be one?
I like Billy. I've seen him go elsewhere and race and win.
Yeah, he's got
I think
multiple
he,
championships.
yeah, he. I think he came down to the Dunhill too when they did a small block, big block, challenge, and I'm pretty positive he won. So.
I don't think I've never been to that track. That's one of the few tracks within shouting distance that I've never been to was the hill. I've been
Yeah.
to
The hill has come a long ways from where it was at Dunhill too.
Okay.
I can attest to that. I mean, it's just a normal Friday night racetrack in Bradford County, Pennsylvania.
Who runs that?
Eddie McKernan does. He's the
Okay.
promoter. And he's brought that place a long ways
Do
from
the
what it was.
Lamphere own a track or no?
Yes, they do.
Which one's that?
Keith Lamphere's dad owns
What?
it. Big Keith, we call him.
What track does he run? The Hill?
The Hill Speedway, yep.
Okay. All right. So they don't own it. They just kind of run it.
Well, Keith owns it, and Keith Jack is just drives at it. Eddie McKernan promotes it pretty much.
Okay.
And you might people sit there and they throw the theories out that there's favoritism, and I'll be the first one to attest that there is none. I've seen Keith Jack get the black flag and parked for a night because of something. So.
I always said that I thought it could be done, but you have to have the right employees in place, and
Yeah.
you have to tell them, look, I don't care who it is, it's and you almost have to give yourself a shorter leash, if so say in that situation, if something happens, it's almost like, well, Keith, we're putting you to the back. We don't really care if you hit him or not. It was close, so you're going to the back.
Yeah, I've seen him penalized many of times. I've seen a lot of the guys with the last name of Lamphere get put to the back or put to the trailer.
Well, that's good. That's the way it should be, and
I've
then
even seen one get thrown out for a week over something.
I bet that was a lot of fun on Sunday dinner.
It was the promoter who made that call, so.
Oh, okay. And then Penn Can, that was my COVID home.
Yeah,
Back
that
when
was. Yeah, COVID home. Yeah, I think we had a lot of those because New York wasn't allowed to race until what, June?
it was late. It might have been after that, I think. And then then they couldn't have fans. So even they were racing and it was all streaming on Facebook and stuff.
I remember that we went to Outlaw in August of 2020, and it was the weirdest feeling ever looking over there and seeing nobody in the stands. Everybody's wearing masks, and it's just a weird feeling.
It is. So yeah, so we went to Woodhall a couple times, paid pit prices, and just kind of snuck around, if you know what I mean. But
The one thing I can say about COVID years is it amazes me on how tracks in New York stayed open. And if you think about it, if it wasn't for streaming or Facebook, anything like that, where they get the money out of it, there's probably a lot of shut down tracks right now.
absolutely. Yeah, it I don't even know. As a track owner, I guess I don't even know what you think, That kind of I and that was the first year Nicky and Terry bought the place. So
Yeah, I remember that.
you
That was
imagine
hard.
you imagine you just bought a racetrack and then they, well, sorry, no fans, nothing. Like that
Yeah.
puts you behind the eight ball before you're even getting going.
I remember the first night at the Hill Speedway when they said, oh, Pennsylvania's allowed to have the racetracks open and stuff, just got a social distance. They had 26 great sportsmen that night. Pits were packed, and everybody was there from New York State because they
That's
wanted to race.
what I was gonna say. Nobody was really happy about COVID, but I kind of wonder if the promoters in Pennsylvania, might have been.
They were thankful for it,
Yeah.
but I mean, it took a lot out of the New York State guys, and COVID, it's a sensitive subject, everybody.
Yeah. Well, that was my thing is we drove 2.5 hours to go watch racing.
That says a lot.
There's not very that's quite a commitment. And they weren't even I mean, no disrespect to Penn Can by any means, but they weren't big shows, they were just your weekly that's just your weekly show. It wasn't like it was the King of the Can or anything like that. It was just a Friday night or
Yep.
Saturday night, I can't remember.
They run Friday nights. They wanted to go try Saturday nights one year, but they couldn't do it because of the contracts that had to be Friday nights.
Right. So when you show up to these tracks as a series promoter, You just kind of do whatever you got to do, or how do you go about doing that? Do you go talk to the owner, the managers, and kind of get everything set and then go talk to your drivers? Or I
Pretty
guess,
much,
what's a
I
race day look like for you?
waking up, eating breakfast.
After that.
Pretty much when I get there, first thing I do is sign in, go get set up, and I usually try to find the promoter, but by the time you're there, things are going. You don't see the promoter till the end of the night. So pretty much I just go up and set up for registration, and when the drivers come up, I'll greet them and wish them good luck, have a safe night. And then pretty much around drivers meeting time is where I catch up with the promoter and thank them for letting us come in, put a show on. And then we just do drivers meeting, and again, I sit there and tell everybody have a safe night. Don't do anything I want to do. And let's put on a good show for the fans, because that's what we're there for.
Right.
And pretty much, hopefully, it goes smooth. That's all I do is pray that nothing bad happens. It's a smooth run. Everybody gets home safe.
Have you ever been caught with a decision and you're like, "Ooh, I don't really know what to do here." Not the rain situation, maybe something
That
different.
was the most recent one, the rain decision one. I would have to say probably the second season where Todd was doing tech, and I just got done getting dressed and stuff, and he comes down to my trailer and says, "Hey, we got a situation." I said, "What's that?" He goes, "Check carb spacers tonight. Found this carb spacer because it was a crate, so you got to have the specific part number for that crate." And it was not, and I had to make that tough decision of, if I let it slide, everybody's gonna ask for that one thing. But if I didn't want to disqualify the guy because it's our second season, and you end up having to go by the rule book because the rule book's there was black and white. And I felt guilty doing so because he was in the points hunt for another championship. So,
So you ended up doing it?
yeah, I rules are rules kind of thing, and can't let that slide. And most recently this year, we had another issue up at Thunder Mountain that night where he had a spring that wasn't legal. It just measured different because you're supposed to have a certain height spring. And I was faced with a tough decision because I had the track saying, "We got payout ready. People are waiting for payout. What's your decision on tech?" And I panicked and put him to the end of the cars on the lead lap. Well, as I started driving home, I started wondering the same thing. Did I make the right call? So the next morning, I called the guy and I said, "Look, I was pretty lenient last night." He goes, Yeah, you were." I said, and I asked him, "How do you feel about being put last place points?" He goes, "That's fine by me. If that's what you got to do, you got to do it." Thankfully, he was all right with it. But if he sat there and said, "No, this is what you did last night, you're going to stick to it, or I'm going to complain on Facebook or whatever," that's where it's tough. But he was very understanding, and he even offered me the spring so I could make him look bad in the next driver's meeting.
Well, Jake, I appreciate you hopping on with me here tonight. I don't want to take up all your time. Do you got any sponsors? I know between the series and your car, you might have a ton of them, but just anybody that you want to give a shout out here before I let you go.
Well, first of all, for the serious part, I got to thank Joel Smith at Close Race and Supply. Since the whole deal with the start of the series, he's been our number one title sponsor. Very thankful for him. He does a lot for the drivers, does a lot for me, myself. And then Insider Performance, All-Star Performance. Yeah, I don't have the whole list in front of me. And then on the racing side, I got like 17 sponsors that are hard to remember, but the main ones like Ingersoll Rand Federal Credit Union out of Athens in Pennsylvania and White Sox here. Matt Rogers Construction, Roof Jewelers, MR Dirt Heavy Duty Truck Parts, Sugar Creek Transport. They're ones I can think off the top of my head. 6K Logging. I have to go look at the car, but that's down in the garage.
Well, hey, I appreciate you joining me here this evening. I really enjoyed hearing a little bit more from the promoter side of things, and we might have to do this again maybe over the off season or something.
Oh, for sure. We can do that.
Well, you have a good night.
You too. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Well, that was awesome. I'm glad that I had him on. I really enjoyed getting the promoter side of things. I know I just said that, but I really did. You know, that's something different. You don't get to hear about all that stuff. We don't have. I'm probably not going to have the ability to interview a lot of guys that travel to different series or different tracks with their series. So, just great to, great conversation there with Jake Maynard. Great guy, and you know, I didn't even get to touch on the tech guy that I wanted to talk about, Todd Burgess, and you know, just the great job that he does and. With the track and with IMCA as well. So I'll definitely have to have Jake on and we could have a little bit more conversation about everything. But once again, I do want to give a big thank you to D&L Disposal. They should be your first call for waste management needs. They offer a residential garbage route in Jasper, Troopsburg, Woodhall, Addison, and the surrounding areas. Aside from that, they also offer a dump trailer rental service for your bigger needs. They'll drop it off at your location. All you have to do is load it up. They'll come and take it away for you. Give them a call at 607-382-7609 to get started with D&L Disposal, the premier residential waste management service in the Woodhall area. And once again, I do want to thank everybody for joining me this evening. Upcoming at the Woodhall Raceway, $800 on the line for the Insinger Performance Modified's King of the Bullring. I hope to see you all on Saturday. Please remember, like and subscribe on the YouTube page, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Hit the download button, rate 5 stars. You can follow us at Woodhall Raceway 64 on TikTok. A shout out to Andrew Herber. He's taking that over for me as I just do not have the time or the creative ability to do that. So shout out to him. And I'd also like to remind everybody we are at Woodhall Raceway on Facebook. So until next weekend, you guys all have a good night.